on this edition of Retronauts.
Welcome to my world.
Hi, everybody. It's Retronauts, episode 9-er. I'm Ray Barnhall. Thanks for joining us. And we have a good one for you today. And joining me in the studio and outside the studio are starting with Bob Mackey.
Hello, everybody.
All right. And on the line from Parts Unknown, Jeremy Parrish.
Hi, it's Jeremy Parrish.
Bob, you did remark two episodes from now that this would be the first time Jeremy was on the line.
Oh, actually, you're right. This is, oh, so. God, we're...
Right. Thanks to our time-traveling shenanigans...
Vision mail.
This will chronologically be the first time.
Welcome to the Retronauts Time Vortex. And our special guest, once again, Matt Leone.
Hello.
Today's topic is Konami arcade beat-em-ups. And Matt, when you were here last time with me talking about arcade racing games, you said, you know what, go ahead, call you anytime we just talk about arcade stuff. Yes. And I figured now's the time.
Thank you.
So it's kind of a coincidence also because this is actually a backer-requested topic this time around. So I thought, you know, let's get Matt in here once more. Just get it out of the way. No offense to you, Matt.
I'm local and, you know, can get over here on foot.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, this is from a backer named Steve Martin. Go ahead, make a joke.
Excuse me. How about that?
Funky King Tut.
Is he a wild and crazy guy?
Yes, he is.
Anyway. All right.
I'm sure Steve has never heard these jokes before, by the way.
Of course not. Of course not. But anyway, I asked Steve to say a little something about this topic, and here we go. Steve says, when I think of the term retro, the first thing that comes to mind is being a kid when arcades still existed in malls. During that time, there were many gaming experiences that could only occur if you were spending what little allowance you had in the local mall arcade. The beat-em-up genre best represented the multiplayer experience at the time, and whenever you saw Konami's name attached, you were sure it would be awesome. And yes, Konami did have a pretty nice history of beat-em-ups, and by that I mean walking around beating up guys, much like Double Dragon. The technical term that came out of Japan was belt scroll action game, because the way that the ground is drawn, it kind of looks like a conveyor belt sort of angled in that. So that's what we're really going to talk about, because there are some outliers and some, you know, hair splitting things we could talk about, but that's just Double Dragon type stuff. And Konami did make a lot of bank on those kinds of games, especially in the 90s when they made a lot of licensed ones.
Was this really like just a 5-year period for
kind
the most
of,
part?
Yeah, yeah, kind of. Yeah, I mean, chasing that
sounds
cash cow.
Right.
But Double Dragon, of course, was made by Technos, and everyone who immediately took after Technos in that genre tended to be pretty competent at it, because there were ones from Sega and Capcom, and others were not so great, like Data East made a couple, and they were kind of poopy. So I think, in terms of like quality, Konami sits somewhere in the middle, because some of their games weren't all amazing, especially the original ones, but they focused on those Western licensed games really early on, and they made sure to make them flashy as hell and very attractive to people walking by, and that, I think that especially makes them unforgettable in the history of the genre. I don't know, any other thoughts on that?
Yeah, I totally agree about the flashiness. I mean, regardless of how they played, Konami's arcade brawlers looked pretty much better than anything else out there. Not necessarily in terms of detail, but just in that, like, that sheer cartoonish authenticity. Like, the X-Men game looked like X-Men. Simpsons looked like Simpsons. And Simpsons, I'm sure we'll talk about later, but that was crazy because at the time it was really kind of released, the series was still pretty young, and people maybe didn't know about it as well as they would come to over the next few years. But yeah, I mean, I was always drawn to Konami's arcade brawlers.
Yeah,
And I think they fit the licenses, too. Like, if you look at all of Capcom's, to me, they might look a little better detail-wise than some of Konami's, but they all kind of look the same. Mm-hmm. Whereas Konami's, you know, Simpsons looks nothing like, you know, Aliens looks nothing like Sunset Riders and all these others.
Yeah, exactly.
I just enjoy the music of these games. Are they all done by the same, the Konami whatever club, the word I can't pronounce correctly?
Probably yes and no, I guess. It would be my safe answer.
Because I assume
certainly that, like, they certainly worked on very similar hardware for those few years, and it all kind of had the same tone to them.
Yeah, so, like, the music has a really crunchy, sample-heavy tone to it that I love. I love it. And like, the good part about playing these games at home now is, like, you never heard that music that well, you know, in the arcade.
Yeah. At least a couple of these games, probably more, have, you know, familiar Konami names attached to them, music-wise, like Michio Yamane is on it, did some work on a couple of these. So yeah, we will mention Ninja Turtles and Simpsons a bit. I We've kind of done them to death before, and I don't want to harp too much on them, but they are worth talking about. However, I thought we'd just split up the discussion into, like, Konami's original arcade beat-em-ups and then all the licensed ones, because there are less original ones, shock of shocks.
I think that was kind of unique, too, because most of their competitors were all original games, or mostly. You know, Punisher was maybe not, but...
That is true, yeah.
And Konami, I think, probably had the most notable licensed games.
Yeah, for sure. Also, this will not be completely chronological. I just sort of like went down a list and added them, so don't expect that kind of accuracy. But anyway, let's start off with a game called Crime Fighters, and this was released in 1989. This is one of those typical, like I said, Double Dragon type gang busting kind of adventures. There you just beat up all sorts of gangs, you go through the cities and whatnot. This came out pretty much the same year as Ninja Turtles, or maybe just before it, and visually it does kind of look a bit like it, although it kind of feels like a practice run as well, because the graphics are kind of blah. I mean, the sprites are way tinier than the Ninja Turtle ones. I mean,
yeah. It's like, did Final Fight come out this year as well, 1989? Yeah, like, were these concurrent? Mm-hmm. Did Crime Fighters come out for... I mean, it's hard to tell what a release date for an arcade game is, but I'm just wondering, yeah. Like, Final Fight looks so much better than this.
Fight is dated 89.
Yeah, so, it is. Yeah. It was originally called Street Fighter 89.
Ah, okay.
So there you go.
Cool.
Yeah, so that's Crime Fighters, and again, really not a ton to say about this one, because it was just really plain, and like so many of those other games, it was just, you know, fighting up gang.
I like how all four of the guys, they're palette swaps, basically.
Yeah.
So they all have the exact same white shirt, but totally different color pants, so you can tell them apart. Like,
yeah.
And they're just like bright colors. But then you go to cutscenes, and like one of the guys is black, and like there's this whole different look to them that you don't see at all.
Right.
In the game.
Yeah, maybe not. Yeah, maybe didn't do a lot of QA on that.
It's too much work.
So yeah, not much to say, although they did make Crime Fighters 2, which is also called Vendetta. And that was not as cheap looking anymore. I mean, that came out after the Turtle stuff and everything. And so I think it really comes into its own visually speaking, although again, it's just beating up a bunch of gang members.
Well, but here's how they changed it. Instead of all having the same white shirts, they all have the same blue jeans.
Yes.
And their shirts are now the colors that their pants used to be.
Yeah, I love it.
They have different heads.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, yeah. No, they actually start to look like their own people in this game.
Right.
An important thing I like about these games is that they're like a pastiche of every crime/action movie that's set in New York.
Yes.
And it's just like, it's fun to watch those movies now. Like, I fought him in Final Fight. I fought him in Double Dragon. Like, I just like that in The Warriors as well. Like, urban, like, crime/action movies.
Yeah, I mean, there were so many of those from so many different companies. It's like, what is the gimmick after a while? It's like, oh, it has a different kind of fat guy with different kinds of tattoos.
Yeah.
I'd say one thing Konami is kind of notable for, and in these two, but also in some of their ones, is four players. Like, most of their competitors didn't do that.
Yes, absolutely. And that is certainly something I was going to mention, the fact that they really banked on the four-player stuff, and that's pretty much why we remember Ninja Turtles and Simpsons so well, and X-Men as well, is because they added all these extra joysticks, and you could bring your friends around, and everybody had an equal chance to play, and it really brought out that multiplayer fun. So Crime Fighters was much like that, although it just was a bit of a lamer game. Mm. But later on, we have a much better remembered game, Sunset Riders, which was also ported. One of the few, I think, of Konami's beat-em-ups that weren't licensed that were also ported to the consoles. Mm. Just a little note there. But this is, of course, about the cowboys and guys in the Old West running around shooting things. This time you had a gun. You can shoot things, not just beating guys up. And there were some also good, quote-unquote, set pieces, like horse riding and train-based levels as well. And people really like it that way. And you could also... it was multi-leveled in that you could jump on roofs and things. And
that's right.
Yeah. It looks more like a beat-em-up, but it kind of plays almost like a Contra.
Yeah, it's kind of got a Rolling Thunder thing going on.
Yeah, I can see that.
The split levels and the shooting. That one, actually, I totally never saw it in the arcade, and... I never bothered to play it on a console because I always thought it was a light gun game for some reason.
Well, it did have.
So when I actually played it and realized, oh, it's not really just a light gun game. It was kind of a revelation.
There's a game is that Wild Guns you might be thinking of? That's sort of They do look similar, but like one of the things I like about Sunset Riders is it makes some strange choices with colors. Like I remember like one of the characters is pink, or there's like a boss that's like hot pink.
Like
a lot of weird like powder blue, hot pink, like weird greens and yellows that you would not expect to see in a Western game, you know?
Yeah. The Mexican character I think wears pink.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean Mad Dog Tannen would have called these guys dooted up egg suckers or something along those lines, and then dragged them into the town square to hang them by the under construction clock tower. not really fitting the Old West vibe.
He also would have said, are you literally yellow? So yeah, Sunset Riders is great. Anybody have any good memories about Sunset Riders? Because it is one of those bigger Konami titles that people like to at least clamor for some sort of re-release.
I like how in the ending you literally ride into the sunset.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, we talked about voice acting, but like I really enjoy the voice samples of all the bosses when you kill them. Like it's a little bit of comedy, you know, added to the gun mayhem. Although this game has a really good sense of humor, though, you know.
Yeah, true.
Like you rescue like brothel madams or whatever, don't you?
That's
some point.
All of these games.
Okay.
You know, I rode the train to work from San Francisco's Sunset District for like 7 years, and it never occurred to me to create a club called Sunset Riders.
Oh my god.
I blew it, guys.
Now it's too late. But yeah, I do like what you said about the sense of humor, Bob, because again, after like Crime Fighters and stuff, like all these games, I guess maybe by virtue of their license, but it also carried over some humor into their original games as well. And it also goes hand in hand with like the flashiness of some of these games as well.
One point I wanted to add, and it's not like this would be a consideration today, but it wasn't back then, like kids didn't necessarily care about Westerns. Like that was more of like a generation before kind of thing. So the fact that they went with this subject matter is kind of impressive. Although like it didn't matter as much then, but today looking back, like I didn't care about Westerns. No one I knew cared about Westerns, but we still played Sunset Riders.
Yeah, me neither. And I did not even play many games like that at all. So yeah, I mean, I briefly played Sunset Riders and I liked it, but yeah, like you, as a kid, it was just like, man, whatever.
Yeah, it kind of makes sense that this game came from Japan, because I think Japan probably saw more of, you know, the Western concept in relationship to America, because it got our pop culture and that sort of trickled over there. So, you know, that would stick in their collective consciousness, I'm sure.
Yeah. Let's move on to the next original game, Monster Maulers. Sunset Riders,
Monster Maulers. Okay.
Uma Oprah. This was kind of like a superhero team fighting a variety of gruesome monsters. And I do mean gruesome because there's like a kind of a biological monster stage. It's like a beat 'em up version of Life Force in that one stage, kind of. But this, it's like a superhero team. It kind of has like a Super Sentai, you know, Power Rangers vibe to it, including what is, I believe, a vocal theme song that plays during at least one stage
You're
beating up monsters, in Japanese, of course.
And it's a Konami game, so you fight a Moe? Is that how you say it? Easter Island guy.
Moai.
Right,
Moai.
Right, Moai. Yeah, actually, you also fight the first level boss from Life Force at one point.
Yeah, exactly. So it all ties
together. It's got lots of self-referential and referentialism in there.
Yeah, and I think it's notable for that. I mean, if you're kind of a Konami nerd, and I think we all are to some degree, then yeah, you should give Monster Maulers a try. It doesn't look too great, but it is notable for that, and just, you know, the kind of a kookiness to it.
Was this ever released in America, or am I thinking of a different Konami brawler?
I think Monster Maulers is the either a U.S. or European name, because in Japanese it's called something else entirely.
Okay, got it.
Yeah. Following that is a game called Metamorphic Force, and that's almost the same concept as Monster Maulers. You are beating up creatures of different kinds, but this is more like Konami's take on Altered Beast, because you have these human warriors that become beasts and tear shit up. But it also is a little bit cartoonier, I guess closer to Monster Maulers in that way. The sense of it is cartoonier, but in a way that it almost should have been a licensed game. Like, you think that maybe Konami was trying to catch the lightning in a bottle of TMNT or something, maybe. So I copied down the characters here from Wikipedia. We have Bon, a Japanese martial artist. His guardian soul is a fighting bull, hence his beast form is a minotaur. His color is red. And Claude, the French swordsman who wields a saber, his guardian soul is a white wolf, and he transforms into a white werewolf. His color is yellow. Okay. There's Max, the American fighter with a... What kind of fighting style? Guys, what do you think? American?
Bare-knuckled street fighting.
Hamburger style?
Boxing,
yeah.
Really? Okay.
Hamburger's a good guess. Good guess. But his guardian soul is a black panther, and so his beast form is a werepanther. His color is blue. And then there's Ivan, the Russian hunter and wrestler, of course, who fights...
Does he turn into a bear?
Well, Jeremy, I have some good news for you. His guardian soul is a bear. Too bad his color is not red. It's green, actually.
I'm actually watching a video of this right now, and it looks a lot like Golden Axe 2.
Yeah,
not Golden Axe 2, but Golden Axe as well. And there's even these little imp characters that have bags that are running around.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the setting kind of reminds me of, like, Altered Beast, actually. And when you have the animal transformations in there, that becomes even stronger. But obviously, the playstyle is different.
Yeah.
I guess it's like Konami's Sega mishmash.
Do you think this was an attempt to, like, create an Animorphs licensed game, and then that didn't work out, so they changed up the characters and said, let's just go with it?
Possibly. That'd be a pretty violent game for Animorphs, even. But yeah, like,
that could be why the license fell through.
Yes, exactly. But yeah, it doesn't really have shades of, like, trying to make a franchise, you know, maybe even akin to Cheetahmen or something.
Oh, God.
Could have been. I think that's... Maybe we can explore that more when we talk about the licensed games.
Well, I mean, this was in the wake of Ninja Turtles, right?
Yes,
So
totally.
Any sort of team that could mutate, and there were four of them, is not, like, out of the question.
Yeah, for sure. And it's just, like, it's just funny that it also came from Konami.
Yeah.
Who was responsible for all those. Anybody play this in person?
I never have.
No?
Nope. I've never heard of it before this episode's notes.
Well, neither have I, but I have heard of it, and so I did know about it, and it is kind of interesting for the notes that I mentioned. Following that, the final original game that I want to talk about was Violent Storm, which is really another kind of lackluster game, although the big draw this time was gigantic sprites, because that seemed to be sort of a small little trend in these arcade beat-em-ups. Sega made a game that was called Arabian something like this, but it too had these giant sort of anime-style sprites that would scale in and out, and it was just crazy. It was kind of hard to track.
It almost feels like Konami had a little bit of a complex when you look back on, like, Crime Fighters and the early Ninja Turtles being so small that... They you know, they see all their competitors doing these games with giant sprites, and they kind of needed to kind of counter that as best they could, and maybe they went too far here.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I think it was also kind of like the what people saw in the Neo Geo too. It was just like, oh, they're making these sprites bigger and bigger, and they're scaling them like crazy. We gotta make some of that. Yeah, of course.
I mean, we'll get to this, but I think that's what G.I. Joe was, right?
A little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit like that. Yeah, not quite to this scale, though, in Violent Storm, but...
Scale? I get it.
Yep. Mm. Thank you. Jeremy's an astute Retronauts listener.
That's right. That's what I've been reduced to now.
And just like, I mean, it's a video game trope, but just like in the first two games we talked about and Final Fight, it always begins with your girlfriend being carried away, or just a woman being carried away.
Mm-hmm. You have pickup items and weapons here, and this game has some great ones. You have little pigs running around you can pick up for points.
Uh-huh.
You have footballs. I don't know if they turn into footballs, but you can toss footballs at guys. You have, like, a lobster dinners.
What year is this?
93
okay.
or so. Yeah.
Yeah.
It doesn't exactly look like it, because I think one of the trade-offs with bigger sprites is that the animation is a little bit lessened, and so you don't get quite as many frames of animation as you did in, say, Turtles in Time. Mm-hmm. And you know, the game's kind of ugly. Not necessarily the art, but just the character art specifically.
It reminds me of Two Crude Dudes in a way.
Yeah.
Just like some of the character designs.
Yeah, there's some crude dudes in this.
Some crude busters.
Yeah, yeah, of course. Yeah, and just the typical, again, another gang fighting game. You go down to the city, you go into the docks, you go down into some sort of prison dungeon to fight spiky guys. It's really, really nuts. So, I mean, that's the original. Those are the non-licensed Konami beat-em-ups I wanted to talk about. I don't know if we forgot any. I mean, I tried to look as best as I could for some, and I found some hair-splitting hairs ones that we can talk about a little bit later. But for now, let's move into what Konami was really known for, and that was the licensed games. I will start with the letter A, and that is Aliens.
Mm.
They made an Aliens game based on the movie years after the movie, and before Capcom's own Aliens vs. Predator beat 'em up.
But years after Contra.
Yes, true. Yeah. Not quite the same. Anybody play this in person? Anybody remember it at all?
There was never this machine anywhere near me, so I never had... But I played plenty of other ones, though.
I hear Jeremy say yes.
Oh. Yeah, I played it, and like at the time... It didn't really stand out to me. I mean, I liked Aliens fine, but mostly what struck me was that I'd already played Konami's Alien games, which were called Contra, and I liked them a lot more than this. And yeah, I don't know. This didn't really do anything for me.
It does sort of hamper itself in that way. It's like, you have the notable things in the movie, like the walker, and you get to tool around in that, and that's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. But other than that, it's just, yeah.
To me, Konami's games that we're talking about kind of have two tracks. Mm-hmm. One is just straight beat-em-ups, and one is beat-em-ups where you can shoot stuff. And so to me, this is kind of like in the Sunset Riders, Bucky O'Hare-style category,
yes.
Where it is a beat-em-up in some ways, but it's also a shooter in other ways, and mm-hmm. they kind of have a different feel because of that.
Yeah, for sure. But I still think it it counts here, because it is kind of a belt-scroll game. And it also has Contra type gimmicks, and that has sort of a third person shooting levels and some weird bosses that you may not have seen in the movie, like the one that kind of looks like a scrotum with a spine on it. I don't think you play as Ellen Ripley. You play as
some blonde guy.
I'm sure there's a great backstory in that you can probably find in Dark Horse Comics, but
although the flyer does have like some sort of weird blonde Ellen Ripley ripoffly, I don't know, whatever you want to call her. But that was back in the era where half of Konami's arcade flyers consisted of like a really, really cute woman in like a torn midriff t-shirt.
Lots
and
of midriffs.
Somehow they said, yes, let's do that with Alien, because that's exactly what Alien sells on.
Yeah, Konami was great at making those, I guess you could call them live action arcade flyers, with people dressed up in costumes and maybe not even quite accurate costumes, but just standing around the arcade cabinet or what have you.
I'm guessing arcade owners were more horny than most.
I think it was more like a dude who worked in Konami's marketing department was like, I've got one trick in my bag, and I'm going to use this trick every single time.
Yeah. Yeah, you know the marketing guy is like, hey, can we hire some sexy girls for this?
Yeah, pretty much. Can we get some vodka, too?
All right, so that's Aliens, and I will not waste any more time. Let's go ahead and talk a bit about Ninja Turtles and then Simpsons. So, of course, we did do a previous generation Retronauts episode on Ninja Turtles just before we started this endeavor.
Yeah, and the Simpsons games.
Yes, that too. And, yeah, they were both pretty good, and we talked a lot about them. And, I mean, have anything sort of an overview that we want to say about Ninja? I mean, we have said before how they were very, very flashy and very, and tried to be as close as they could be to the cartoons and really pull it off. And that's why, you know, so many kids, I think, were attracted to it and just spent so much money on
just the recreation of the like first 8 seconds of the intro, you know, with the light is coming out of the sewer and the lid flies off and you hear the first bars of the theme song. I think that was like a beacon to children, like throughout wherever that arcade was, they just like would go to it. That's the first time I saw it. And I was like, I must play this game.
Beauty.
Yeah.
See, to me, it was like, all these games, it was kind of at the time there was this big cliche that if you had a license, you would just throw it into a beat-em-up, and that was kind of the game you would get out of it, instead of kind of customizing it to what the license made sense with. Mm-hmm. And Ninja Turtles was one of the few cases where the license really made sense with the game, and especially with the four-player concept that Konami was on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, like, that kind of fitting together made more sense to me than it did with most of the other license beat-em-ups.
Yeah, stuff. They really hewed close to the source material.
And then they made The Simpsons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Jeremy, anything?
Yeah, I mean, I played a lot of the TMNT arcade games and ended up buying a couple of them for home consoles, even though by that point I felt like I was way too old for Ninja Turtle stuff. Like, the games were just so well made and so fun that I kind of put aside my embarrassment and just said the hell with it. And yeah, I really enjoyed the home conversions, but whenever I had the chance to drop a few quarters or several dozen quarters into the arcade machines, I definitely would. Like, they looked great, they were fun, simplistic, but, you know, what do you want from an arcade game?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, I've said it before. I mean, people love these games, and I've said before, you know, they're not all great. I mean, they're still pretty simplistic as beat-em-ups, but the big differentiator is that they were so focused on spectacle and just, you know, making the graphics as great as can be and you know, also just adding things extra you can beat up. Like, who doesn't love hitting the fire hydrants the street poles and things?
Throwing enemies into the screen.
As a kid, like, I would always appreciate when these adaptations were authentic, and this one did feel really authentic. And so did The Simpsons, even though it had to play a little loose with the rules of the show just to make a game out of it.
Yeah.
But there were still all these references that if you were watching the show, you would get them, you know.
Right. I guess we can move on to The Simpsons. And like you said, they couldn't do a whole lot with it, I think, because the show was just so still kind of early
on
TV. And, you know, they had to make a game for, you know, a period of how many months. And by then I'm sure the show was advancing a bit more and getting into its groove, but in the arcade game, it's just pretty much like a fever dream.
Oh yeah, it is.
Simpsons-based fever dream.
That's a good way to describe it. And, I mean, we talked about this before, but just the amount of care put into it is astounding, especially coming. I'm sure there were Japanese fans of The Simpsons, but you did not expect a product like that to come out of Japan from like a foreign audience, you know, who might not have been watching the show alongside of us, you know.
Yeah, well, I'm sure also you had like the American office making sure everything was up to code.
Right.
But back then, that was like, that must have been way above and beyond what most companies were doing.
Yeah.
Because, oh, yeah.
Just, like, the things I saw in that game were, like, the Life in Hell rabbit is a major player in some of the levels. Like, you see him, he does the transitions between the levels and stuff. Right. Like, that would not be in the game unless someone either from The Simpsons or someone on the team was like, oh, Macarini does this other thing. Yeah. Let's put that in, too.
Yeah, doesn't Granning's original plan for Marge's hair to hide Life in Hell bunny ears play into the game? Like, can't you see a sprite with her with bunny ears?
Yes, that's true. Like, Macarini's original crazy idea is followed through in the Simpsons game, so when Marge gets electrocuted by whatever enemy does that, you can see the rabbit ears under her hair. It's crazy.
Yeah, I didn't get that at the time, but then later I discovered Life in Hell and was like, huh, interesting. But, you know, the fact that sort of kind of off-the-books concept made it into the game suggests to me that, you know, not just the production company at Fox or whoever was the studio that did Simpsons. I don't honestly know my trivia that well, but I feel like probably Granning himself had some level of input into the game. Maybe after seeing the terrible NES games and saying, we got to do better than this guys.
Yeah.
I really don't know.
One other thing, and you guys can disagree with me. I feel like the most work out of all these games was put into The Simpsons as far as like the sprite work goes. So many great animations that you don't see that often. I'm always surprised when I play the game, like, oh, I never realized like this animation plays when you do this in this certain circumstance.
And you know, they color the sprites well. It's not like they all have black outlines like they do on the cartoon.
I love how this game looks.
Their outlines blend well in terms of color.
Well, the co-op attacks were I thought something really clever. It's not really something you saw in Brawlers at the time, and definitely helped it stand out. The idea that, you know, you could play by yourself or you could play with someone else, but if you played with someone else, there was this kind of secondary advantage that was sort of like a super move that you could do, and was, you know, something that kind of, to me, you know, made me want to play with other people more than I might with another kind of brawler. So that was something I really enjoyed. Although the one where Bart and Lisa run around screaming was like in the attract mode, and so whenever you would like eat a meal or something near a Simpsons arcade game, you'd inevitably hear that, and it got really annoying. But
I bet.
I know what you're talking about, actually.
I can hear that noise in my head.
Yeah. And just having four characters all kind of had their own personality, like that was pretty rare at the time.
Yeah, like each weapon reflected their character, you know, like Marge had a vacuum cleaner and Lisa had a jump rope as much as that changed.
And there's even that little detail, like when they fly in, I mean, they fly in from the screen, they have like superhero alter egos.
Yeah, that's true. And like they each have a unique design. You only see that one time when you when you die.
Yeah. But like I was saying, it is kind of a fever dream. I mean, you have like these giant crusty the clown balloons that sort of expand and deflate and sort of freakishly.
It's
just like, yipes, what is going on in this game? Like, what kind of source material were they looking at?
And as much as you want to examine the story, and you shouldn't, there's no reason that because Smithers steals a diamond, everyone wants to kill you. I never was able to connect the pieces there.
Yeah.
Connect the dots, rather.
Yeah, the generic thugs in this game are not really from the show. They're just guys going after you for some
like
reason.
Like the mobster characters where there was like one tall one and one short one with like an ill-fitting coat. I mean, that was a cute design, but it's like not from the show itself.
Right.
They created new characters for this, including like a wino you fight in Mo's bar.
Yes. Yeah. So
who looks a little like Mo, actually.
Oh, how about that? And also, like, they had unique voice clips too, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, everyone except for Harry Shearer's characters. We heard that in the intro. We can
welcome to my world.
There you go.
That's Simpsons Arcade Smithers. I would have got Mr. Burns, who is just as bad, but he gets kind of drowned out in the music. So.
Yeah.
So I don't know the story there. What happened with Harry Shearer? He just wasn't available, or he didn't want to be part of it?
Harry Shearer is a notorious crank when it comes to doing anything other than what he's obligated to, which is why he did not participate in the Simpsons ride for Universal Studios. So none of his characters are actually in that ride. But that's what I hear. He's not easy to work with, based on many stories. So he probably was not down for recording video game lines.
Yeah, so not only is Smithers like the villain who steals a diamond and also like straps bombs to himself in the final boss fight, but Mr. Burns bursts through with like this giant robot suit. Mm-hmm. And it's a trip.
It's the worst last level in a brawler because it's just a boss fight, and that boss fight is designed to steal the rest of your money that you haven't spent already.
Yeah. Same with the Shredder.
That's true. That's true. Yeah.
But any other notes on The Simpsons?
I could talk forever about this.
I know you could, yes. And I know we have.
We have.
But, all right. Well, then let's move on to another very odd license this time. Roller Games. Konami made an arcade game on the Roller Games and an NES game. And if you have no idea what Roller Games is, I don't blame you. But it was like this late 80s TV show based on like roller derby. It was like a mix of roller derby and pro wrestling because you had these characters and these sorts of storylines going on. I don't know enough about roller derby culture to know if that's a normal thing, but that's what happened on the show, and it was just kind of bizarre.
Yeah,
you can find clips of it online for sure.
There was a pinball game based on it too.
Sure, yeah, okay.
The arcade by me had one of those.
Yeah, I think the story goes like this: the guy, the creator behind it, just wanted to try and make it into this giant thing, and it only lasted like one season on TV. It just fell through the crapper.
And not to like diverge us too far, but there was an NES game.
Yeah, no, I said that. Yeah.
Oh, sorry, I missed that.
Also, pretty different too.
Yeah, well, typical arcade console differentiation thing. So Konami made both of those. And the arcade game, of course, is a bit more straightforward with it. It's just you rolling around on the rink there and, you know, the banked edges and whatnot, and just beating up as many guys as you can through, like, each round, and then you get scored for it. And
it does give you a good sense of speed, but it also reminds me of those racing, pre-digital racing games that just have like picture on a loop, you know, and then it's like just going through the picture over and over.
That's
again.
Why the fun of each level is crazy, like, because you do this little loop before you get into it, and it has all these weird camera angles that it's like kind of testing the perspective of what the engine can do.
Right.
And then you just sit in this exact same camera angle for the rest of the game.
Yeah. Yeah.
It true. Teases you with this like really kind of high tech thing, and then it just stops.
Yeah. Typical of some other arcade games.
We're not ready yet, guys. We're not ready for that.
Right. But, check us next year, maybe. yeah, so it is a very kooky game, and it is basically just you fighting off, like, throngs and throngs of roller skating thugs as they just come in from each side of the screen, and then you get scored on how many you beat up.
Yeah, there's, like, rounds, so it's kind of like I don't know, I wouldn't want to give it credit for this, but it's kind of like an early team fighter, you know, where you have like deathmatch kind of stuff, like, you know, spike out kind of games. It was kind of a precursor to that, if you want to look at it that way.
Yeah,
Though I don't think it was really intentionally that way.
Yeah, you could, for sure. So yeah, check out Roller Games. I think the NES game is a bit better, just as like a straightforward NES action game.
There's really good music, too.
Konami on NES, man.
Yeah, it's like even with the property like this.
I'm not going to ask about the arcade game, but has anybody ever seen Roller Games on TV?
I saw that Drew Barrymore Ellen Page movie.
There was like a remake of, like, I don't know, there was some kind of roller movie in the late 90s, early 2000s with like LL Cool J. I think it was like a futuristic roller. I don't even know if it was based on this. I'm sorry.
Starlight Express?
Probably not. I think the roller game is kind of a fly-by-night thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, roller games always kind of struck me as the missing link between 70s roller derby and American Gladiators, but maybe that's just something I invented.
No, that definitely works. That definitely works. okay, moving on. Another classic that everyone knows, X-Men. And this is six players, the big fancy one. I mean, they did make other variations with less players. Yeah. But everyone knows X-Men to be this humongous cabinet with six players on it. And I think people may remember it more for its player count than the actual game, but I don't know. What do you guys think?
And its dual screen setup thing.
Oh, yeah.
Where like one of them now is always faded a different color than the other one.
Yeah,
super. Well, I think screen. Like one is actually facing you and one is facing upwards, pointing at a mirror or whatever. Right. The mirror might be filthy or something, but...
Yeah, true.
I think it's more of I think it stands up, I mean, maybe that's the same of all these games, but they stand up more of as like a spectacle than as an actual game experience. Yeah. I played through this again on Xbox Live Arcade. I wasn't a huge fan of it. I feel like without that, like, it was always the centerpiece of any arcade or like movie theater I went to. Like, we have the X-Men game. It's huge. We're putting that up front and there's always going to be kids around it. And I feel like without that effect, without that like sort of dominance over everything else, it kind of loses a little magic for me.
You know, one of the really interesting things about the X-Men arcade game is that, like, by the time it came out, it actually felt kind of dated and irrelevant. It was such a specific slice of the X-Men's history, that sort of mid-80s Chris Claremont time. And by the time it came out, you know, they'd sort of moved into the sort of everything's tough. Here's Jim Lee. We've got strings with spit. It's awesome. Look at our ropey muscles.
We have so many lines.
Characters like Dazzler that had been totally written out of the comic by that point. And Nightcrawler was pretty much like a nobody. Wolverine had a totally different outfit. Blah, blah, blah. It was just, yeah, it just felt kind of like they missed the boat on that specific interpretation of X-Men.
I had the same opinion because I was watching the kind of bad cartoon series at the same time, and I played the arcade game. I'm like, who is Dazzler? I know Jubilee, who I guess they created for the cartoon, I think. I'm not sure. I'm like big with comics.
No, she was actually in the
okay.
comic.
But yeah, I was just like, I don't know who this character is. Why does Wolverine's costume look like it's dull and boring? He's usually like bright yellow and whatever. Yeah.
Bob, I think we might get some blog comments over you saying the cartoon was bad.
It premiered at the same time as Batman, and we all knew who won that battle.
Yeah, it was not a good cartoon, whatever people may think. But, you know, I was one of those kids who got into X-Men because of the big X-Men relaunch, X-Men 1, when they started doing two books in parallel. You know, I was a sucker, and I jumped in at that point. And, you know, that came out right around the time that the X-Men arcade game hit. Maybe, you know, like a few months after or something. I don't remember the exact chronology, but it was such a different property by that point. All the, you know, the creators who went on to found Image Comics had kind of revolutionized that franchise and turned it into something very different from, you know, the sort of mid-80s style that the arcade game was based around. So even aside from, like, Magneto, the villains you saw in the game weren't really in the comics anymore.
Right, yeah. And just like the heroes' costume designs as well. It is kind of like that worst case scenario, I think, for Konami. It's just like, we came out with this and now it's obsolete, technically. I mean, people...
Yeah, whereas Simpsons kind of came along as a game and was early, like so early that it feels a little weird in some ways. Like this came along kind of late and feels weird in some ways.
Yeah. It's very kooky. Oh, and of course the boss fight is just you and Magneto. You fighting against Magneto for however many minutes, and he doesn't transform or anything like that. Not that he would.
Just a human-sized final boss.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he doesn't just completely annihilate Wolverine's metal skeleton or Colossus's metal form. Mm-hmm. What's he even thinking? Come on, guy.
I know.
Use those powers.
On to some perhaps lesser remembered licensed games from Konami. We have Bucky O'Hare, which is kind of based on the cartoon series, which was kind of based on like a very short run comic. Back
yeah, I was
going to
say,
70s.
Like, where did Bucky O'Hare come from?
Bucky O'Hare was a comic book by Larry Hama, the guy who went on to create the G.I. Joe comics through the 80s and actually was writing the Wolverine comic around the time the X-Men game came out.
Is there some tangential circle relation to Howard the Duck, or am I just... Oh, there's a duck in the... Never mind, I got it.
I think Howard the Duck was kind of in that same funny talking animal vein, but Howard the Duck was by Steve Gerber and Bucky O'Hare was Larry Hama. But yeah, I guess they both were kind of in that sort of spiritual vein. They were sort of like Marvel's underground comics in the 70s. They had like comic magazines and that sort of thing where stuff that wasn't necessarily mainstream would show up, like anthologies kind of. So they do have kind of common roots that way. Both were Marvel characters, and I think Bucky O'Hare was Marvel. Anyway.
Yeah, maybe. Anyway, yeah. But then it was turned into an animated series in the 90s, and it was... After Konami got it, they also made an NES game based on it. I think maybe people liked the NES game more, but like I was saying about like catching a lightning in a bottle, this was another one of those times where it was just like, okay, Konami's making a game based on a cartoon with four characters in it. Okay, great. And that's kind of what Bucky O'Hare is, although I think Bucky O'Hare, compared to Ninja Turtles, is still pretty good visually, just because the visual style of the cartoon was just kind of out there. I mean, Bucky O'Hare is a green rabbit wearing this elaborate sort of military dress. And
Flash Gordon kind of.
Yeah. And he has a wisecracking duck, Deadeye duck. Not to be confused with Ace Duck from Ninja Turtles, but they look very similar.
They do.
Yeah.
Yeah, like nothing in this game feels recycled from other Konami stuff. Like it's clearly its own thing. And I don't know, to me, I think very superficially, so whenever I see a game with like really short characters, it almost feels like a different genre to me.
Yeah.
Like compared to, like I think of a beat 'em up as, you know, tall, skinny guys, and here when you have like more super deformed guys, I think it was a little something else.
Like, minus the behind the character perspective, this plays a lot like Aliens, it seems like, just based on the video. Just like a lot of shooting, no jumping really to speak of.
Yeah. Right.
There's a stage with like giant walls of turrets. That's kind of like Contra.
Mm.
I probably saw this in person once upon a time, but I just never cared about Bucky O'Hare, so I never...
Oh, the cutscenes were amazing, too. Fully voiced, like, that, cartoon replicas, like, they were...
But yeah, this game is definitely another testament to how accurate Konami could get with their cartoon licenses this way. After that, we go across the ocean, sort of. I mean, Konami made an Asterix arcade beat-em-up, which, of course, based on the European comic strip. So if you're not from Europe, you've probably never heard of it.
Yeah, did the game come out here?
I don't think officially. Maybe it slipped through in some places, but I don't think it was an official release. I might be wrong, but... Nonetheless, it was based on that European comic, and there were, you know, shitloads of Asterix games, no doubt, over there. Mm. And you would think that maybe, you know, Konami doing an arcade game based on it would be pretty good, and maybe it'd be pretty accurate, and some of it does look okay, but at the same time, it feels like it's just like some sort of B-team was working on it, because it doesn't have quite the character, to it that Ninja Turtles would have, and I don't know. Just from looking
at it. It's like selective
it.
Character. Like, there are brief moments where he's, like, swinging his arm like a windmill or whatever, but then it just cuts back to a regular game for the next 2 minutes, and then just, like, another amazing moment.
Right, yeah.
Is this... Do you think they knew, like, this would not see much play outside of, you know, Europe, so it wasn't, like, a priority?
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, at this point, yes, it's all pretty much based on what will sell now to kids based on whatever's hot at the time. And Asterix never really existed here in any sort of popular form, so it just didn't get anywhere. They may have released it in Japan, but I guess...
Maybe our French listeners, and there are some, can tell us, what is the appeal of Asterix? Do kids still care? I want to know.
Well, it's like...
It's like if Lost Vikings was a beat-em-up.
Yeah.
Well, do you still care about BC?
Oh, is it really that bad?
No, I mean...
Okay.
But it's like a comic strip, comic adventures, I mean...
Yeah, I just know it's a beloved... I just want to know, like...
It is one of those, like, institutions.
Yeah.
But who really cares?
I think you might get more hate mail over that.
Look, no,
you know what? Asterisk, go to hell.
No. I'm also speaking from American's perspective, because there are tons of comics that none of us really care about anymore, despite the fact that they're still around. Mm. So, I'm sure it's nothing.
The only time I ever saw Asterisk was in my French books in high school.
I wouldn't say that about Tintin, okay? Tintin's great.
I agree.
All right. Any other commentary on Asterix? Anybody?
One of the guys drinks a potion, as far as I know.
It does kind of have that Golden Axe feel, just because of the character design.
Yes, of course. Yeah. Let's go back to American cartoons now.
No, okay.
Oh, please no.
I know what you're going to... This, yeah.
Konami made a game based on Wild West Cowboys of Moo Mesa.
Oh, dear.
Which, of course, was yet another 90s franchise trying to steal some thunder away from the Ninja Turtles.
When I hear that name, I see the show being pitched.
Yeah. Right.
I don't even see characters. I just see guys in suits with graphs behind them and pictures of cows.
It's actually space cowboys who are also cows, actual cows, or bovines, I suppose. Yeah.
Kids love cows.
Yes.
The title was so good.
So, they're cowboys, and they're also cows. Does that mean... that they, like, enslave their own people?
Yeah, they brand themselves. So
they are species traders, yes.
I'm sure you can find some great fan fiction.
Relationship with Pluto.
That's complicated.
I'm sure there's some great fan fiction out there if you really want to learn any sort of backstory. Or made-up backstory.
I actually don't.
Okay, neither do I. Let's move on. The cartoon was created by a guy who worked on the Ninja Turtles. How about that? And... as a game, this one is kind of spiritually similar to Sunset Riders. Again, big shock.
How much later is this than Sunset Riders?
A year or two.
Yeah. Okay, because the same amount of care obviously was not put into this, it seems like. The animation is not as fluid, the characters are not as expressive.
It's very much get the job done. And also, it's very linear, not like in a gameplay standpoint, but just like the actual plane that you play it on. It's not like a belt scroll game where you can walk all over the specified area.
Aren't there like some parts that are and some parts that aren't?
But most of it's not. It's mm-hmm. it's very like straight line sort of go and shoot guys. So yeah, not a lot to say. Again, I think I was too old to really care about this.
It could have been worse. It could have had like Street Sharks or whatever.
Well, yeah, this might as well be Street Sharks. There is what I'm saying.
It's almost like a mascot game, more than a beat 'em up. Like this could be in the Boogerman category.
Maybe.
Wait, there wasn't a Street Sharks arcade game, was there? Please tell me there wasn't.
No, but I do remember seeing something that was like Whack-a-Mole with Street Sharks. Okay. Maybe it was just like a bootleg Street Sharks. But yeah. I'm sure it was and it could have been an inevitability, but it was not. So,
I like this timeline.
Yeah. So if you like Sunset Riders with a bit more like exaggerated cartoon design, like try out Wild West Cowboys
and levels where a bird carries you around so you can fly.
Yeah. Well, that's not too bad. I like that.
No, that's awesome.
But it is more. I think in that regard, it is more shooting focused than Sunset Riders. What do you know? Actually, I did watch the video, and there were some more voice clips. It seemed like they did give voice clips, whereas a lot of the other cartoon games that were not Team Minty or Simpsons kind of didn't really use a lot of voice in them. But this does seem to use genuine cartoon voices. I'm not entirely sure. Once more, I want to say like this really was just a case of them licensing anything that could possibly take off like Ninja Turtles did. And I don't know if maybe these companies were coming to Konami like that or what, but it seems like they were
maybe
just...
Maybe it was like a package deal. Like, if you want to do another Ninja Turtles game, you got to take something else with it.
Maybe, yeah.
I can guarantee you this had no cultural no lasting power. No one I knew watched this. I'm sure it will never appear on a BuzzFeed article ever in your lifetime.
Don't underestimate BuzzFeed.
I guess not. Yeah,
they're scraping.
Yeah. 10 animated GIFs from Cowboys of Mumesa that illustrate the government shutdown.
Oh, God.
It's going to be so dated by the time we release this. I'm sorry.
No, I don't think so. Okay. Making fun of BuzzFeed is eternal.
Got it.
It'll also come back into vogue when the second government shutdown happens in January.
Oh, right, yeah. Mm-hmm. Happy shutdown, everyone.
There we go. So that's Mumesa. I want to take a detour into the console realm because Konami made games based on Batman Returns for the NES and Super NES, and they were both beat-em-ups, and they did not make an arcade version.
I really like these games.
Yeah. The NES version, you know... kind of straightforward. It's a bit more like Ninja Turtles, and the SNES version I like much more. It tries to be like Final Fight, and it kind of succeeds because it looks almost exactly like it, just with a Batman Returns
I feel like
aesthetic to it.
Having been made with consoles in mind for a console made this game much better than, or like hold up much better than the arcade games. Like I feel like I can go back to this game and play through it, where the arcade game is just like, you know, using imaginary money to buy myself invincibility.
Yeah. And then,
essentially,
yeah, you're just being assaulted with audiovisual majesty for a while. It's like, you know, now I'm a few quarters short. Maybe that, yeah, I guess that has some weight to it, because I do like these games. I mean, the NES one, it doesn't, at the end of the day, I would just pick Sunsoft's original, but mm-hmm. I mean, the NES one is not that badly made, and the NES, Super NES version is just great. I mean, it really hones the increased color palette to the Super NES, and just really tries to be like Final Fight. I mean, in that way, I mean, this whole discussion is like, oh gosh, we're just trying to pick out the best things about these beat-em-ups that all play so similarly, and oh my god. Mm-hmm. But in that sense, like, it stands out, I think.
Yeah, I mean, but that's not, it's fair to say that's what we're doing, because these things had a 5-year window of relevance in a particular place, like literally in a particular setting. So playing them later, we're not in that world anymore. Mm-hmm. So it's fair to, you know, kind of pull the good parts that we can still recognize.
Yeah. Any experience with these, Matt or Jeremy?
I never actually played them, but I remember there was a Batmobile like shooting section. It was kind of crazy in the Super NES one.
Unfortunately, I have no experience with them. I played the Sunsoft original Batman, and that was the last Batman game I played until... I'm going to say Arkham Origins.
Well, no better time to jump off, I guess, and then jump back on. But oh yeah, there is a Batmobile section, of course. Mode 7 Insanity. You shoot guys in the Batmobile.
It looks cool.
Yes.
briefly,
yeah.
Like, I think there's only one or maybe two in the game, so clearly it kind of wears its appeal off pretty quick, but I think it's the kind of thing that's fun for a few minutes.
And of course the game is very snowy. Of course, the movie being based on the Penguin, so it's a snowy night in Gotham. But you do actually get, you know, the likeness of Michael Keaton inserted in this game as well.
Hmm.
Yeah.
The NES original did to some degree, but it was one of those times right now. Oh, now it's enhanced colors, 16-bit Michael Keaton. How about that?
But the multiplicity joke in there somewhere.
Mm-hmm. But the cutscenes are kind of lame too. It's just like single frame sort of text scrolls going along the bottom as well. It's just not as great as it could have been. I did want to say though, this is like an oddly rare moment for Konami in that they made beat 'em ups based on both Marvel and DC properties. Of course, in the console realm, you get a different set of rights, and so that's probably why they made these for the consoles at the time. But yeah,
good call.
Yeah, neat little thing there.
Of course, Warner is publishing Lego Marvel, so Warner owns DC, so it's all one big mixed up world where everyone just wants money.
You can do anything with Legos,
right? Exactly. So. To sort of going down towards the end of the list here, we have G.I. Joe, which I sort of list as a kind of, because it's not really a beat-em-up, but it was like a big licensed brand, and it was four-player, and that's why I sneak it in here. And it's also third-person sort of running forward and shooting guys, also based on a game called Devastators that Konami made.
Yep.
Just very, very similar to that. And
yeah, there's actually no beating up in that game whatsoever. It's entirely blowing the hell out of things. I mean, you're shooting, and then you have grenades and stuff. And when you get four players on screen, it's just like a complete mess.
Yeah.
Actually, is it four player? I know it's
definitely
it's four players. Two. Okay. Yeah. I mean, it's someone mentioned the Sega Super Scalar style earlier, and it was definitely kind of in that style, but it was just a straightforward like run. Straight ahead and blow up everything as it appears. Very, very dumb, but a lot of fun.
It is the fakest 3D you'll ever find. Like,
right.
It's nearly there, but you know, it's still operating with really old technology.
But it's really weird because at the time it came out, it was in the early 90s, and by that point, G.I. Joe was like in a serious decline. The property kind of didn't matter anymore. And a lot of it was based on sort of the cartoon from 10 years prior. But at the same time, it drew like a lot of the toys and the some of the characters from that later period, kind of contemporaneous to the game's release. So it was this really kind of bizarre mishmash. If you've followed G.I. Joe like I did as a kid, like it just seemed really, really bizarre.
Yeah. But they did always market G.I. Joe for years and years and the toys and stuff.
Oh, sure, sure,
Yeah, I mean, the cartoon was probably kind of dead in the water, but yeah, that is weird. It's also
I was really, really offended that Snake Eyes shouted G.I. Joe because, God damn it, that man is mute.
Come on. Come on, Konami. Anyway, it's also like Aliens because they made that game like years after the movie. But then again, I mean, if you put a movie game in a movie theater, it's probably going to get some money anyway. Not exactly the same with G.I. Joe. But yeah, I just bring it up because it is one of those big licensed games that Konami made, and I thought, why not throw it in? But yeah. I have some other kind of games here that are not quite beat-em-ups as we've defined them here today, but they made a few top-down action games that have on-foot characters beating guys up, killing things, like a game called Rock and Rage, which is like cartoon rock and rollers doing that sort of thing, and a game called Dark Adventure, and I believe a couple others like that. And there are also games like Russian Attack and its sequel that they're more like platformers, although, you know, you are running around and knifing and punching guys. And then also there was an arcade game from Konami called Punk Shot, which was a fisticuffs-based basketball game that sort of was released in between Arch Rivals and NBA Jam. So that's kind of interesting to see, and it does have some cool sort of graffiti-like art style to it. I've gone through the list that I prepared already. I don't know if anybody has any lingering comments about anything that we discussed so far. Matt?
Bob was enjoying some Rock and Rage right there.
Yeah, it looks like Gauntlet almost.
Well, the concept is crazy. There's this like giant hand that comes down. You have like four people playing on stage, and like the hand steals the lead singer. It's like woman, and then you have to like play this guitarist who runs around using his guitar to save her. It reminds me of like Revolution X or almost like Brutal Legend in some ways. Yeah. Like it's kind of
cartoony Revolution X. Yeah. Anything else, Bob?
I think we covered everything, but I mean, I don't know how these games would look to someone who didn't grow up with them
playing them
as the attraction they were, as like the 5-minute diversion from shopping or before the movie or whatever like that, you know?
Well, I mean, this is Retronauts. We don't have to worry about that.
That's true. I wonder like how these games are viewed now by a kid who watches Simpsons now. Oh, I'm going to download the arcade
game. Turtles now.
Yeah. The Turtles never go away too.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, it looks totally different. It doesn't.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah,
I do wonder about that.
Well, I would say kids these days might not necessarily go for the graphics in the Turtles game, but I think they would still gravitate toward the Turtles, like the property, because it's still actually really, really popular. Like, it keeps bobbing back up into pop culture mainstream every 5-10 years, and I saw a bunch of Ninja Turtle costumes this year at Halloween, so I don't know. I think if you stuck the Ninja Turtles game in front of a kid, they'd probably be like, hell yeah, Leonardo, right on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think to some degree that would still happen. I just don't know about Moo Mesa.
That, I don't think even kids at the time cared, so yeah.
There are millions of Moo Mesa Halloween costumes rotting in a landfill somewhere. Mm-hmm.
Also, that cartoon was on ABC, and everybody knew the hot cartoons were on other networks.
That's true. Fox Kids.
Yeah. I did want to say that, you know, the really connecting thread among all these games was a lot of them were four player. And like I said, Konami really banked on that, and it really worked out for them, I think, because it sort of became their trademark, mm-hmm. especially after Ninja Turtles and how that blew up. It's like, oh, now every beat 'em up we have to make has to be four player to some degree. So like Crime Fighters is like that, and then the other ones like that. And it's kind of crazy because you didn't see a lot of other ones after that. A lot of other companies making the sorts of four player games or even six player. I mean, Jesus.
I also think that, I'm not sure if we covered this, but it felt like arcades were sort of like how movie theaters eventually adapted to widescreen to offer something the TV couldn't. Mm-hmm. This four player experience, while you could have it at home, it involved a lot of technology you probably didn't want to buy or that really didn't support much.
And it wasn't always the games you really wanted.
That's true. Yeah. So, yeah.
I mean, Ninja Turtles was not four player.
Yeah. Yeah.
Any of them were. So yeah, for sure. And the added advantage of greater graphics and sound and all that stuff. And
yeah, definitely like just a spectacle. Like you would notice the machine even if no one was there. And if there were people there, you notice even more because it'd be like four rowdy teens hooting and hollering over Raphael.
And an excuse to eat pizza. I mean, you probably played these at a pizza parlor birthday once or twice.
Yeah.
They should have had like some kind of tie-in where you buy a slice at the counter and you get like a free game.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe some places did that. Okay, so I want to wind down with one last question, and this was suggested by Steve. He wanted to bring this up. He wanted to ask us, which company made the best Marvel beat-em-up? So we have four examples. We have Konami's X-Men, Capcom's The Punisher, Sega's Spider-Man game, and Data East's Captain America and the Avengers.
Huh.
What do we think? I mean, I think most people leap to X-Men. But I will start and say I think The Punisher is the best one of this group. It's just kind of crazy. I mean, everywhere you go, there's guns dropping everywhere. You can pick them up. You can go and shoot guys everywhere. It becomes a real festival of violence, much like The Punisher is in every other medium. That's my comment. Anyone else?
Yeah, I'll back that up. I think The Punisher is the one that I would, you know, review the best. I think the collision detection Capcom games was a little bit better than some of the others. I think just kind of the art was better. But personally, my memories are strongest for Spider-Man, just because I love that zoom. Like, any game that zoomed in and out was awesome, and I was kind of a sucker for it.
True, yeah. We didn't talk about it because it's Sega, but their Spider-Man beat-em-up was a bit like the X-Men game. It's that it sort of tried to borrow the comic book aesthetic a bit, and used a lot of those dramatic zooms and pans and things in it.
Like, some levels you were all small, and some levels giant.
I don't know if it's that great a game, but I might put it as I might put it as a second place. I don't know. Bob,
guilty pleasures.
I'm gonna say, by virtue of where I grew up and what was available to me, I played Captain America the most, I played X-Men a lot, and I know Data East did not have the best games, as we talked about earlier, but I remember enjoying that way more than X-Men.
Okay.
And I have no affinity for the characters in either game, really, because I don't read a lot of superhero comics. I never did, but for some reason that game just felt a lot more playable to me.
Sure.
And
that's
all I can say.
I mean, the big thing about the Captain America game was that the sprites were also super tiny.
They were really tiny, yeah.
It didn't really help the game. I don't like it that much, but yeah. Jeremy, any thoughts?
No, I mean, the only one I've played is X-Men, and by the time the others came out, I had lost interest in brawlers and that style of game, so I never touched them.
Well, that's totally valid, but we'll put you down for X-Men.
Okay, I'll be the obvious leap then.
Yeah, all right. Okay, any other last thoughts?
It's surprising how short this time period was, though, you know, when you look back for this just one genre.
Yeah, it's really like 3 or 4 years when you really kind of nail it in.
I think you can quantify it like, okay, we have Technosis games, especially Double Dragon, like that set off this chain reaction of all these beat-em-up games. Mm-hmm. And that lasted for like a good few years. And then we have Konami coming in. Okay, now we can make licensed games. We can make all these things based on cartoon licenses or movies and whatnot. And then that sort of became the sub-trend of that. And that sort of blew up for a while. And then eventually, much like shoot 'em ups, you know, they just kind of like died out because they got so samey and people were not innovating in them at all that it just kind of like fizzled out. Mm. But I think, again, like I said at the top of the show, in Konami's sort of defense, I guess, I mean, these games did last because they did, the ones that they put the most care into ended up the ones best remembered. How about that? Ninja Turtles and Simpsons, especially. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think it works out. I mean, they're not all great games, but the fact that we can talk about them and remember them fondly really counts. And that's why I like to do Retronauts. So, yeah, I'd like to thank Steve Martin for backing us and also suggesting this topic for us. I hope I did good by you. And also thanks to Bob.
No problem.
And Matt.
No problem.
And Jeremy.
Oh.
All right. What else? Well, it is the end of the show, so let's plug some things. We are online, retronauts.com. You can find our blog there, and we do post some interesting details on the show. I'm not saying I always do, but the other guys usually do a good job.
I just have a lot of free time.
But you can find the episodes there, and if we put any specific music in there, you can also usually see what it's from. Twitter, Retronauts as well. We try and stream a bit more. Bob does anyway on Twitch, twitch.tv/retronauts. Unfortunately, I recently got a job, so I've really been.
I like how you phrase that. Unfortunately,
I know.
I can't make free things anymore.
Unfortunately, no, for the future, Retronauts. No, I mean, I would love to stream more, but it's just it starts to be a big deal. And of course, you can find us on iTunes. Please give us a nice review or two or three, whatever you find time. We do appreciate it because, like every podcast tells you, it really helps. And personal Twitters, I guess, I am RDBAAA. You can find my joking around on there. Bob, you are?
I'm at Bob Servo, BOBSERVO, and I also write for US Gamer and Something Awful.
All right. Jeremy on Twitter first.
I'm GameSpite, and I write for US Gamer and also my own blog at 2-dimensions.com.
All right. And Matt?
You can find me at LatMeon, and I write for Features at Polygon.
And good features.
They are good, Matt.
Let's just say that right now.
Lovely features.
Read Matt's stuff. Okay. Well, that is the world of Konami Arcade beat-em-ups. Again, pretty specific topic, but again, I had fun with it. It is one of my favorite genres, and that's I know it is for Matt, at least, too, and that's why I brought him in. So, thanks once again. Thank you, everybody, for listening, and we will be back next time with Retronauts Pocket. See ya.